Today we're going to be reading from the Bible in the book of John, John chapter 13. We're going to be starting from verse 31 and finishing in chapter 14 at verse 14. So Jesus predicts Peter's denial. When he was gone, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man is glorified, and God glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself, and will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Simon Peter asked him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus replied, "Where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later." Peter asked, "Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Then Jesus answered, "Will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly, I tell you, before the cock crows, you will disown me three times. Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going." Thomas said to him, "Lord, we don't know where you are going, so how can we know the way?" Jesus answered, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." Philip said, "Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us." Jesus answered, "Don't you know me, Philip? Even after I've been among you such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and that the Father is in me? The words I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work. Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or at least believe on the evidence of the works themselves. Very truly, I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works I have been doing, and they will do even greater things than these, because I am going to the Father. And I will do whatever you ask in my name, so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. You may ask for anything in my name, and I will do it."
I don't know if you've ever watched a World War II movie, or a movie based in World War II. Usually in the movie somewhere, there's that scene. Dad has been called up to go out to war. So Dad is kind of getting dressed in the military gear, and he's got his bag over his shoulder, and he's going to the door. And he turns around to his wee family, usually a couple of wee boys, and there's that kind of pep talk he has with the boys. "I'm going away, I'll be back. You're the men of the house now. You need to do these things. You need to look after Mum. You need to keep the house in order." And that's kind of where we're at in this passage in John. From chapter kind of 13 of John all the way through to 17, Jesus has his last hours with the disciples. Today we're looking at parts of chapter 14. But bear in mind just now, the disciples have been with Jesus for 3 years. They have walked with him, they have watched him, they have given up their livelihoods to be with Jesus. And now Jesus is telling them that he's not going to be there for them. It's been Passover time. They've been celebrating when the Passover feast was. They're up in the upper room, just to set the scene. Okay, so end of chapter 13. Jesus is saying he's going away for a while. And Peter's saying, where are you going? Where are you going? And chapter 14 answers that question, where is Jesus going to? Verse 2, read with me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would have I told you that I am going there to prepare a place for you? So, where is Jesus saying he's going? He's been asked a question, a fairly simple question. Where are you going? What is the answer? Jesus often answers, not in yes and no or one word answers. Sometimes he answers almost like a riddle. And let's just try and unpack that just now. He says, my Father's house, that's where I'm going. You and me, what does his Father's house mean? What do you think when you read this passage? You're like, that's an easy one, Ian. It's heaven. But for the disciples, what does the Father's house mean when he says that? When has Jesus used that expression, Father's house, before? Do you remember when Jesus was cleansing the temple, when he goes in and he makes a whip? The temple that's been used for prayer has now been used. It's basically a marketplace. There's cows and sheep and all sorts of stuff going on. And Jesus is distraught at what has happened in the temple. And there's that saying he has, my Father's house has become a den of thieves, isn't it? My Father's house. He's talking about the temple. Also, when Jesus was 12, his mum and dad came to celebrate the Passover, and then they were heading off again. Jesus was meant to be with, I don't know, an auntie or an uncle, a friend looking after. They're heading off, and they realise, where's Jesus? We've lost him. So they go back to Jerusalem, and they search high and low for him, and they eventually find him. Where is he? He's in the temple. And there's that kind of conversation as his earthly guardians are panicked, sick. Where is he? Where are you? What's going on? He said, did you not know I'd be in my Father's house? My Father's house. So Jesus is kind of saying something about the temple here. So the disciples are a bit confused. You can see they don't quite understand. And you can almost see why. But Jesus is trying to draw them. He wants them to ask questions. That's why he's doing this. Jesus goes on to comfort them. He's going to go away, but the reason he's going away, it's not just for a break because he's fed up of them, although I can imagine that he probably was. I'm fed up of disciples sometimes, I'm one of them. But he was going because he's going to prepare a place, and that gives them comfort because he's preparing heaven for them, a place that they will dwell forever with him that's going to be perfect. And that should bring you comfort today. You maybe wonder, where is Jesus today? I wish he would just show up and I could speak to him, and he could tell me what to do, and just show me and lead me. But he's going to prepare a place. Take comfort in that. That if you're a Christian, that the day when he comes back to fetch us will be an awesome day. Thomas is fed up with all this riddle, all these questions back and forth. He just wants to know, are you like Thomas? Do you want to know? Do you want to know the way to heaven today? Maybe you've been coming to church. Maybe you call yourself even religious. Are you desperate to know the way to heaven? Maybe you've came here today because you wanted to see what it's all about. But the most important question you could ask or have answered today is, what is the way to heaven? There's not any other question that's better than that one. So what is the way to heaven? If you were to go into Inverness today, and I half thought about getting a camera this week and going into Inverness and asking folk on the street. I didn't do it, probably should have done, and ask. But if you imagine with me, come on my tour with me, you be the microphone person, and we're asking people on the street, what is the way to heaven? How many different answers do you think you'd get? Eh? Loads. Loads and loads. And they'd all be conflicting, all be different. If you ask Jesus, what is the way to heaven? He won't have many answers for you. In verse 6, when he's asked, he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. That's pretty powerful. There's a big statement there in verse 6. I am, as he opens up. And maybe you read through this and you don't understand I am. It's just a word. This I am is almost like a bomb has been dropped. When Jesus says I am, he says it 7 times in the Gospel of John, the I am sayings. And the reason these are so potent is the roots of the saying I am. If you go back in the Old Testament, in Exodus, Moses meets God at the burning bush. And God has this mission for Moses to go and lead his people from Egypt who have been made slaves and they were to be taken out. And Moses was given the task to do this. So Moses is thinking, I need to go to these people and say, I'm in charge, follow me. I need to go to the rulers and say, you've got to release the people. Who will I say has sent me? And with that, God says, tell them, I am sent you. So the Old Testament name for God was I am. So when Jesus says, I am, he's saying, I'm God. He says here, I am the way. The way. The way. Not many ways, not one of many, not one of a few. He says he is the way. The only way. When I just became a Christian, I went to my friend Scott's house. He still lived with his parents. He still does now. He's a bit of a dosser. And as I was in his kitchen, I was getting something to eat, and his dad came in. And his dad had kind of heard that I'd become a Christian. I'm not sure what he knew. But he was kind of in a bit of a rant. Hey, you know, here you've become a Christian, and I just want to tell you a couple of things. And I was like, wow. I've never really spoken to Scott's dad much before, just the odd kind of, hi, how you doing kind of thing. But Scott's dad had something to tell me. So I was just sitting there patiently. And Scott's dad was saying, I go to church myself, you know. And I had no idea he went to church. I go to church myself. I go to the spiritualist church. And I'm fed up with you Christians. And I was like, I've never even heard of the spiritual church at this point. And his bugbear with Christianity, with me becoming a Christian, was, you're going to tell me I'm wrong, Ian, aren't you? You're going to tell me wrong. There's only one way to heaven. Well, let me tell you this, Ian. In his best kind of Glaswegian accent. He said, it's like this. It's like, you're going up the east side of a mountain, I'm going up the west side of the mountain, we're going up different paths, and we're going to meet at the top. There's many ways to God. That's what he said. I was like, whoa. I didn't know what to say. I'd just become a Christian. I didn't know any of the spiritual church. The spiritual church shouldn't even be called a church, folks, to be honest. It's a deception. If you get any experience of the spiritual church, you can come and speak to me. It's quite scary how they call themselves a church, but Jesus isn't the centre. Scott's dad said there's many ways to God, that we were going up a mountain, but folks, we're not going up a mountain on different paths. We're talking about different mountains. See, Jesus says he is the way, the only way. It's not the same mountain, different paths, it's different mountains. There's only one mountain that leads to God, that leads to heaven, and Jesus is the way. And some folk think, yeah, Christians, you're so arrogant, aren't you? You and your Jesus is the only way. Folks, there's two things we could be. We can either be arrogant, or we can be right. There can't be any other answer. So if someone thinks you're arrogant, then that's fine. But someone needs to be right. And if you experience Jesus, you know it is right. I was at a nightclub before I was a Christian, I might say, and I had got a new pair of trainers. Now, I love these trainers. I don't know if, I'm sure you have. You've seen something in a shop window, and you think, I need to have that. Maybe some of the guys are saying, I don't know what he's talking about. Maybe even looking at an auto trader and said, I need to have that, you know? And you kind of save up if you need to save up. And you go and get that thing, and the thing's nice and shiny and new. And I had these trainers and they're shiny and new. And you know that smell of new trainers that doesn't stay for very long? Not on my feet anyway. But you've got them on and you feel like a king when you've got this new thing on, or you're driving your new car or whatever it is. Because you've got the new thing, the thing you wanted. Well, I turned up at this nightclub in Glasgow, and I'm queuing up with my friends, and I've got these lovely trainers on. If you've seen them today, you'd be proud of me for wearing them. And as we get to the front of the queue of this nightclub, I'm not condoning nightclubs at all, I'm just using it as an illustration. As we get to the front of the queue, the bouncer looks at me. And you know that kind of up and down look you get? Not tonight, lads. I know, what's wrong? You're not getting in with those on. You know, I was thinking, these are my best shoes. These are awesome. He was the only way into the club, and his decision was final. Jesus is the only way to heaven, and his decision is final. You may come to Jesus with lots of things and reasons why you should get there, but it's kind of just like me and my trainers. They're not enough to get you there. There's only one thing that will get you there, and that's Jesus. I don't want to kill you with illustrations, but I need to tell you this. I was driving down into town the other day to get some errands, and I'm passing the Snow Goose, and I'm coming down to the A9 roundabout, and as I'm driving, the car in front of me is kind of braking and doing kind of funny things, and you're kind of thinking, it's got to be some kind of crazy driver driving this thing, and you're just prepared for what's going to happen next. So we get to the A9 roundabout, and just before the roundabout, like literally 2 metres, swerves big right and mounts the curb and stops. And I'm like, whoa. I wanted to feel like a knight in shining armour, you know, so I kind of draw alongside, conscious of the traffic kind of backing up behind me in the rearview mirror. And I was like, are you okay? You know, the kind of international sign for, are you okay? And they kind of rolled down the window and in kind of broken English. Yes, what is it? They were French. And I was like, are you okay? You know? And they were looking for a hostel. And I was like, oh, I know a hostel, I can show you. And like, no, it's in Boulay, right? In Bewley. And I was like, all right. And I'm thinking, man, you're on the wrong side of Inverness, totally. So I said, just follow me, follow me. So I did the right thing, and I went up the A9, and I cut through town, and I came down to the most dangerous roundabout in the world ever. And I forgot that they were following me. Do you get that? When someone's following you, forget. So I just go for it, boom, and I'm like, oh no, I've lost them. So I had to wait, and they followed me again, and got to about Lidl's along that road, and I stopped, and I got out, and I said, right, boys, just along that road, you'll come to Bewley eventually. You know, I could have done a couple of things that roundabout. I could have started, like, writing out instructions and directions to them. You know, A9, 300 yards, whatever, turn right, turn left, blah, blah, blah. I could have went through all of that. The same way as Jesus, when he's speaking to the disciples, he could have given them all this instruction list, but he doesn't. He just said, I'm the way. So when I was speaking to these French people, I should have said, guys, I'm the way. Just follow. Yeah, that's what's happening here. So going back to the arrogancy of Christianity being the only way or the right way. Has it always been this way? Before Jesus, how did folk get to heaven? How did folk get to God? Do you remember a couple of weeks ago, David was preaching on the tabernacle? I think Mud that day said that he was wanting to go somewhere else when he heard that he was preaching on the tabernacle. But it was an awesome service. Really enjoyed it. And I had been doing the tabernacle study with some of the young folks on a Wednesday afternoon before that, and we were just buzzing after church. Oh, he was saying that, and remember that. And when you've just been reading something, you've been immersed in it, and you hear it preached, you're like, yeah. Anyway, Jesus in the New Testament, in the Old Testament, how did folk get to God? He talks about the tabernacle. He talked about the high priest being the only way to God, wasn't it? What happened once a year, there was a sacrifice by the high priest, and he was the link man. He was the mediator between God and man at the time. So in the Old Testament, there wasn't many ways to God. There was only one. And the same in the New Testament here. But today, folks, are you truly asking, what is the way? Do you truly want to know the way? We've been doing a Bible study with a man that doesn't come to church, but we're working our way through John, the Gospel, and I cannot wait to get to John chapter 14, just so that you can see that Jesus is the only way, because I think it's going to blow his mind. On another note, folks, if anyone's here who's been coming for a while or just started coming or whatever, there's a wee leaflet in front of your chairs, and this is basically designed for you to get some more information. If you want to know more, if you want to visit, if you want a Bible study, you want to know more about the Bible, you want to sit down and chat about how to get heaven, or you get troubles or whatever, fill one of these in. Leave it at the basket going out the door, and we'll sort that out for you. Jesus said he was the way, but he also said he was the truth and the life. You know, he could have just stopped saying, I am the way. That was enough. That all encompassed. But he didn't. He went more. I am the truth and the life. And do you remember when Jesus is before Pilate, after the mock trial, Jesus is standing before him. And Pilate has the decision, the ultimate decision, what am I going to do with a Jesus of Nazareth? And he's troubled. He's a troubled man. And as he stands before him, in an off-the-cuff remark, Pilate says to Jesus, what is the truth? But he doesn't wait for an answer. If he'd only known that the truth was in front of him, the very truth. If you want to know truth, you don't come and measure against Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the measure of truth. Truth gets measured against him. He's the life. He's the one who spoke the world into action. John 1 tells us that. He spoke and things happened. The world was created through him. Everything was created. And if it wasn't for him, nothing would have been created. And I was in verse in Colossians that kind of ties that together as well. It's Colossians 1:16. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities. All things have been created through him and for him. Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Following on from that, it's a saying, familiarity breeds contempt. Have you heard that? Have you seen that in action? Maybe you were brought up in the church like I was, and I'd heard about this guy called Jesus week in and week out, and you know what? It didn't really sink in. It didn't really make that much sense to me. And I heard all the stories, and I heard all the miracles, and I went to Sunday school, and I was made to memorize bits of the Bible, but I didn't know who Jesus was. But I heard the name, and I thought I kind of knew about him. The disciples here in verse 8 are in the same boat. Philip says, Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us. Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us. The end of this riddle is we want to just see God. They don't get it. They don't get who they've just spent 3 years with. I do street work when I was back in Glasgow. And we'd go every Saturday onto the streets of Glasgow and just speak to folk who are shopping and just chat to them about Jesus, chat to them about where they're at in life, and chat to them about how to get heaven. And oft times you'd be speaking to someone and they would say, you know, yes, I'm religious, you know, I've been to church and I believe in God. And then there's a pause, and then the next part is a telling thing. But I don't know where Jesus fits in. I don't know where Jesus fits in. Is that you today? You're not sure where Jesus fits in. The disciples weren't really getting it either. You see, Jesus is saying here, like he said when he said, I am, he's saying to them, I am God. Would you see that I am God? If you don't get who Jesus is, the gospel doesn't make sense. You see, he says he is the cornerstone. He's the very foundation of Christianity. He's the very foundation of the way to get heaven. But he is also the stumbling block. He's the thing that stops people finding the way because they're confused. Jesus replies to this. You know, so Philip said, look, show us, Lord, just show us the Father. That'll be enough. Honestly, that'll be enough. I'm not asking much. Jesus replies, verse 9, don't you know me, Philip? Even after I've been among you such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Don't you believe that I am the Father? And that the Father is in me. The words I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing this work. Believe me when I say that I am the Father and the Father is in me, or at least believe on the evidence of the works themselves. Why should the disciples believe that Jesus was God? Why should they believe? Jesus gives them a couple of reasons. He says because of his words, because of his works, because of his miracles. He's like, guys, you've been with me for 3 years. You've seen how I live. You've heard what I speak, and you have seen the miracles. Is that enough? And even for them at that time, it didn't click. who he was. Today, if you don't get who Jesus is, know that he is God, very God himself. He's the only one who can help you. Many religions seek to have Jesus portrayed in a light of someone who is a nice person. You know, if you even look at Islam, Jesus isn't hated. He's got the position of a prophet, but just a prophet and no more. Was he just a prophet, or was he God? Look at the words that he said there. Think about these things. When Jesus spoke, things happened. When he lived a life that was flawless, perfection. Can you imagine what it would have been like growing up with Jesus? If you were one of Jesus' brothers, can you imagine what that would have been like? Jesus being the first of the family, obviously he was just kind of a half-brother. But can you imagine the second one that came along? Mary's reply, you're nothing like Jesus. Can you imagine that? What they would have had to put up with, because Jesus was different. His life was different. The miracles he had done, the disciples had seen the wind and the wave stopped at just Jesus' word. They had seen the most amazing things. With just his word, he raised Lazarus, who was dead, not for 10 minutes, but 4 days, rotting in a grave. And with Jesus, just his words, he raised him from the dead. Was he just a good teacher? Many people that say that Jesus was just a good man. Folks, if you read the Bible, if you hold this chapter and read it this afternoon, that blows that statement out of the water. I want to finish with this. This is a quote from C.S. Lewis. This is a famous Christian writer. He says about Jesus, he would either be a lunatic on a level with the man who says that he is indeed a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. You can shut him up for a fool. You can spit at him and kill him as a demon. Or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and Saviour. But let us not come out with any patronising nonsense about him being just a good teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. It seems to me it's obvious that he was neither a lunatic nor the devil, and consequently, how strange or terrifying or unlikely it may seem, I have to accept the view that he was and is God. And with that, we'll conclude, folks.